Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
By the way, how bad was that Monday night last night? I mean, Jets, Dolphins, Tariq Hill done for the year. Wow, that was an odd injury. Just a simple, you know, 5-yard out or whatever, you know, 7-yard out. So if you were thinking maybe trade deadline, Tariq Hill, forget that. And then just how bad is Jake Browning? I mean, he's horrendous. I was thinking in watching Jake Browning in Cincinnati last night, the Bengals are a 2-1 team, now a 2-2 team, in a division which is gettable for everybody in it, except Cleveland, because they just don't have an offense. But why not go get Cousins? Why not go get Jameis Winston if you're Cincinnati? You know, with those receivers, with that offense, you could be a contender. Now, they have a brutal schedule coming up. They have the Lions, Packers, and Steelers next three. The Steelers at home, though, on Thursday Night Football, like, you're still in that. I mean, I know that Atlanta basically doesn't want to trade Kirk for anything less than like a third, and you got to pick up a lot of the money. But Jameis Winston can be had. He's better than Jake Browning, isn't he? I think he is. I've always been a big Jameis guy. Let's go to Bones. Bones, where are you right now? Where's your outlook after four games for Washington's 2025 season? Bones.
My call. I'm all here, Kevin. Can you
okay,
hear me?
Okay, Bones. I got you.
Okay. Yeah, shout out to Mac, man. Thanks for taking my call, man. I'm like this, man. It's going to be a struggle for us, man. That's only because of the defense, man. And they put Kingsbury, man. He looked like he might be in a daze, man, as far as calling them plays, man, because we got three good young running backs, man, and he's not using them. You know, I mean, these guys, man, we should be averaging 45 carries a game between the three of them, you know? And, you know, right
45.
There, the defense, man,
45.
Yeah, 45.
Yeah, I mean, you only run typically 60 plays in a game. That's a lot of rushes. If they ran it 45 times, that would probably be victory.
Yeah, man, we got to get them we got to get them 15, at least 15 carries apiece so they can get wound up, man. And, like, the defense, we lacking speed on that defense, man. We don't have no speed at all, man, especially coming off that edge. And at the linebacker spots, man. And that's what's hurting us, man. Lack of speed at the linebackers and off them edges, man. But other than that, man, it's going to be a struggle for us, man. And I think we're going to struggle to make the wild card, man. That's why I got it at right there, Kevin. Struggling to make the wild card.
Thanks.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks, Bones. Appreciate it. You know, nothing reflects kind of the up and down roller coaster nature of an NFL football season with each of the 32 fan bases than what we're doing right here. Because I swear to you, last week after the Raider game, wow, sacked Geno 5-6 times. Dude didn't have any time to throw the football. Shut down Genty. I mean, how about Dorrance Armstrong? And I think Dorrance Armstrong's been their best defensive player. Deron, Kinlaw. I mean, we were all wrong on Kinlaw. Dude's a badass. Von Miller looked good. He got his first sack. Week later, defense is terrible. Let's go to our guy Greg in Gaithersburg. Greg, go ahead.
Hey, Kevin, appreciate it.
Sure,
you know, Greg. I'm not really too concerned. I kind of agree with you. It's four games into the season, and I've said this before when I talked to you. I think some of this may be due to how they played the players during the preseason. I think they're still trying to mesh a little
everybody
bit.
Everybody did the same.
But I don't take – but it doesn't, I don't care what everybody else did, but to me, it doesn't take the coaches off the hook. I think there were a lot of plays Sunday where Atlanta had third and long, and they hit somebody underneath the coverage. They were wide open, nobody around them. But the thing that bugs me the worst is when they got third and five, third and four, and the corners are playing 10 yards off the ball, it just gives them the first down. But I'm not concerned. I need another game or two to really solidify how I feel if I think they're going to make the playoffs or not.
Yeah, I think that's wise for sure. Yeah, the funny thing is they were very good on third down. They were excellent on second down. That was part of the problem the other day. They had a bunch of long second downs that they ended up getting chunk plays on. Yes, four games is just so hard to know for sure. And I know I always say 1 week, but it's really 4, 5, 6 weeks. We still don't know. And when you're an injured team like Washington is, but not devastatingly injured, other than Eckler and Wise, those are big losses. I'm not discounting those. And now very likely John Baptiste as well. But you just, you know, each week is a new week. And this is an opportunity. And I guarantee you, if they go into L.A. and they beat the Chargers, the conversation a week from today and a week from yesterday is going to be far different. Far different. And I do think they've got a shot with, you know, hopefully Jaden back and maybe even Terry Bates and Noah Brown back. I think they do have a good chance to go in Sunday and win. I like the matchup, actually, against the Chargers. I did not like the matchup against Atlanta, as I talked about all last week. Let's go to Ross in Tampa. Ross, what's your outlook on this team after seeing four games?
I'll tell you what. What's good, Kevin, first and foremost? Excuse me for that.
Yep.
I gotta stop going to Atlanta to watch these games. 10 years ago, I went. Kirk Cousins, pick six. Ryan Grant falls down. This time, Joe Witt falls down, man. Like, listen, this guy has a Super Bowl, something that Quinn doesn't have, man. I feel like that Super Bowl pedigree should have you put that defense in its place and have them perform well. I got watching the game live versus on TV, I get a different perspective. I can scan the whole field and see what I want to see. I didn't like it, man. On the offensive side, without Jaden, man, I felt really encouraged. But I do have a question for you, because unless I missed the conversation, what's going on with he was a tackle at Brandon Coleman. What's going on with him? Is he like in the doghouse?
I think they just were very impressed with Chris Paul, and they preach competition. And Chris Paul's actually played pretty well, certainly did against the Raiders. And Brandon Coleman did not have a good game at all. Nobody did against the Packers.
I thought he got cut like 2 years ago.
I'm sorry?
I thought he got cut 2 years ago. Shoot, we got Braden Daniels still back there somewhere hiding.
Wait, who got cut? Brandon Coleman was a draft choice last year.
I thought Chris Jones got cut 2 years ago.
Chris Paul? No, Chris Paul has been on the roster. Chris Paul was,
man, he's been like under the radar. I forgot all about him.
Yeah.
Because I was like, okay, cool.
He was this – by the way, if we look back on that, that was the – was that the 22 draft Chris Paul was picked in or 21?
22,
which is Jahan Dotson and, you know, the trade back. The one in which, you know, everybody – the Martys were playing chess against the Saints and Alave and the trade back that yielded, what, Jahan Dotson, Sam Howell, Brian Robinson Jr.
You want to know – the most unfortunate thing about the whole draft.
Yeah,
Kevin?
Seventh pick, 2022. He will be the guy out of that draft that might end up having the best career.
Just imagine if Braden Daniels would have worked out. You could have had a marketing thing with Braden Daniels, Jaden Daniels. Is he still on the roster? Because I actually had high hopes for him, too.
Jaden is. I don't know about Braden. Thanks, Ross. Appreciate it. Let's go to Little. Little, go ahead.
Vision this year, but let me tell you how they can flip the script.
Wait, what'd you say? We missed the beginning of that.
I said I had them fighting for the division this year.
Okay.
I still believe. But look, this is how they can flip the script, man. I'm going to tell you now. You know, Pettibone was keen on matching up. And I'm looking at this team, man. I'm saying, okay, Lattimore can't cover number one no more. Put him on the tight end. Lock him down on the tight end. If he can't cover the tight end, he got to get the hell up out of here. Okay, we bring in the extra cornerback on third down, Iguanawe. We take Wagner off the field. We move Luvu to the middle. Okay? We put Amos on the number one wide receiver. We put Sanistri on the number one outside wide receiver. We bring Emelave in to cover the slack. Come on, it's common sense football, Kev.
Yeah, well,
and that halfback in the backfield don't go nowhere. We sink Emelave. We send him every time. We punish the running back if he stay in the backfield. That's why I understand these grown up folks, man. If you can't get Lattimore to cover tight end, he don't have no goddamn, excuse my language, no business being in the league, man. But it's common sense, Kevin. It's what Pettibone
would do. Yeah, but what you want is what they ended up doing a lot of last year. They ended up being almost, you know, Nickel ended up almost being their base defense.
Right. But
that's fine, but remember, you ended up getting run on to death last year when you were in Nickel as much as you were in Nickel.
You keep Wagner in there on first down. First and second.
Okay, but what happens on second and eight? And Wagner comes out in your base and you get gashed for 15 off the edge.
No, that's when that's why you got Luvu moving in.
Okay.
Look,
I'd like to see what they've seen in McGee. I'd like to see what they've seen in McGee.
I'd like to see him too, but guess what? They ain't listening to us on that.
Right.
I'd like to see him too, and the kid from UCLA. But look, one more issue, I'm going to say something. Look, Kevin,
McGee didn't play
from Annapolis a call, man.
That's Medrano who played at UCLA.
Check on your buddy Robert from Annapolis, man. You got come on, somebody give him a call. I ain't heard nothing from Robert. God bless y'all.
Yeah.
God bless
But remember, they had a slow start last year, too. All right, Little. Appreciate it, man. Let's go to Dre in Baltimore. Dre, go ahead. Hello, Dre. Let's put Dre on hold. Let's go to Billy. Billy, go ahead.
Kevin, good morning. I'm afraid Robert may be trying to plan a parade that's never going to come. That would be my comment on Robert.
But what were the Ravens last year? What were they early? Weren't they? Didn't they struggle early in the season last year too? They're not as hurt. They lost to the Chiefs and then the Raiders. They were 0-2 and then they ran off. Hold on.
0-2.
Yeah, they were 0-2 and then they ran off five
three
straight.
And two. Yeah, I said 3-2.
I wouldn't count the Ravens would you?
Seriously?
Would you count the Ravens out?
I'd count them in all the way to the AFC Championship. Then,
yeah.
All right.
What do you got on our team?
You know, 11 for 30 and 156 yards.
Okay, what do you got on our team?
Kevin, I am super optimistic. You know that. I love this team. I love the quarterback. I think I still believe he's the best quarterback in the league. I do not like the playbook where it puts him too much at risk when he's running the football too much. But his arm is so good and his eyes are so good and his brain is so good that he's top in the league. He's top in the league as far as his skill set goes. The biggest issue with this year is they never had their number one receiver in camp. They had nobody to cover, nobody to work on from a defensive perspective. The rest of their guys are number two. Debo's a good utility player, but he's not a number one receiver. Terry is. And because of that, the defensive backs have been slow to react to these top-tier receivers. Now, if you wanted to win the Super Bowl, you needed to bring in Terry at the beginning of camp.
Okay, but let's be fair here. The last 2 weeks without their starting quarterback and 1 week without Terry, offense has not been the problem.
Offense is not the problem. That's right.
Yeah.
But the quarterback wasn't great. Mariota was not great.
Yeah, he was.
He was good.
He was great last week, and he was really good again on Sunday.
He was a B minus in both games. Jane's A plus all the time.
Well, he wasn't A plus in week two against Green Bay, but he was pretty much an A plus all of last year.
We get Jaden back, we're going to have a heck of a good season. That's still the bottom line.
I agree.
Terry should.
I agree. It could look a lot like last year. Its schedule's different. Teams are playing are different. Understood all of that. I think that I think in many ways they faced. In that short week, Green Bay on a Thursday night on the road, one of their most difficult sort of circumstance games. I'm not saying that, at KC and Detroit at home and Philly twice at the end of the year aren't better teams or won't end up being better teams. I'm just saying that situation was a bad situation on that night. All right, Dre, finish it up for us. What's your outlook now that we've cleared almost the quarter pole? What do you see the rest of the season?
Hey, Kev, thanks for having me.
Sure.
2 points to make.
I think we need to reestablish our identity on offense to keep our defense off the field and protect our players.
Right.
And then I think we need to recalibrate this recalibration we're doing if this season doesn't turn out the way it should, because we only have 5 draft picks next year and, 6 the next 2 after that. And our guys aren't getting any younger, so we might have to sacrifice next year and just get our team where it needs to be over the next couple of years or so.
Yeah, I don't think that you're going to do that with Jaden on a rookie contract. I think you're going to try to be as good as you can this year and next year for sure. But I'm looking up to see what the draft picks are, because didn't they deal somebody in Brian Robinson and get a pick back, obviously?
But that might be 20.
Yeah, they now have 6 though? Picks next year. They now have 6 next year. They got a first rounder, a third rounder, a fifth rounder, a sixth rounder that they got for B-Rob, another sixth rounder, and a seventh rounder. They traded the 2nd and 4th to Houston for Tunsil. And then one of the 6 they got back was a 6th that was involved in the Marshawn trade. Yeah, and the other Marshawn picks were from this previous draft. Yeah, look, when you say reestablish the identity, what do you mean specifically?
The run game has been successful, and we're not utilizing it more. No matter if we're down 10 points or not, you can still keep the defense fresher and just limit the exposure by holding on to the ball longer.
I agree.
And then our receivers can be open because the windows will be there.
Yeah.
But I just think Cliff has to learn the rhythm of the game and adjust on the fly, because talent for talent, we don't have it sometimes, and we just have to really see who we are and just pound the rock.
Yep.
But more easier said than done. But, you know, he just even if we get a flow going, I feel like he'll still give it up and try to get pass happy. And I'm like, you got to protect these guys. Marcus Mariota, when we needed him on certain throws in that Atlanta game, the balls were just – they were just not where they should have been to even be
that throw to Debo on 4th and 3 in the end zone was pretty perfect.
Yeah, for his fourth quarter game on the line throws are awesome.
Yeah.
But it's just
here's the problem that I think a lot of people would have, and I'm not disagreeing with you. Washington is currently the number 2 rush offense in the NFL. They are currently the number 2 yards per carry team in the NFL, but they're also 17th and in attempts, in rushing attempts. Now, you could say, well, in 2 games, they fell behind 2 scores, but we both know the Green Bay and Atlanta games, even though they were not anywhere near good enough to win either one of those 2 games, the scores actually never got really sideways where they had to get out of, you know, trying to run the football. They didn't try in Green Bay. Part of that was the loss of Bates. We know that. And I think yesterday, or Sunday, they could have run it more and taken more of the pressure off their defense and possessed the ball more. Ultimately, they were doubled up in play count and time of possession in the first half. They ended up, you know, on the 10-minute almost overall time of possession disadvantage, and I think they ran like 14 fewer offensive plays. It was one of my criticisms. I think it's hard to do it, and they scored 27 points, and they, you know, they had some offensive success in the game, not on third down though. Third down was a problem on both sides. Let's see, because last week against the Raiders, they decided, we're coming after you, we're going to be physical, we're going to be downhill, we're going to be a running team, and they ran it a bunch, and the Raiders couldn't stop it. All right, when we come back, I want to play something that Dan Quinn said yesterday. He said 2 things, actually, specific to the defense, coverage, and pass rush. I want you to hear. We'll do that next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So Dan Quinn held his Monday press conference yesterday with all of the beat reporters. He was really disappointed, you could tell. I think he understands that they've got some issues defensively. John Kimes started it off by asking him about all of these explosive plays that teams have had, certainly in the Green Bay game, certainly on Sunday against Atlanta. I mean, there were explosive plays right from the jump against the Raiders. Their first snap was a miscommunication and a 45-yarder on offense, Geno Smith to Jacoby Myers. So this is what he said about, you know, being able to defend explosive plays.
And then one of the themes has been those explosive plays in the pass game allowed. Why does that keep happening, and what can you guys do to fix them?
Yeah, and we definitely have to. It's for sure, you know, a combination of things. Like most things, when there's, you know, some issues that you want to fix, you want to get it cleaned up as quickly as you can. On some, it could be as simple as a communication of a switch of a, you know, receiver of 2 and 3. Certainly helps, you know, from our pass rush when we're really ripping into that space to go. And then communication, you know, like in line, how does it go? You know, the calls quickly to, you know, communicate to one another. So we'll work really hard to nail that. We have to, and we'll get better at that for sure.
The part of that answer that was interesting to me, and I'm going to play another soundbite from Quinn here in a moment, is when he talks about the pass rush. And he says, you know, when it really helps when the pass rush is, he says, ripping into that space. You know, there wasn't enough pass rush against the Falcons on Sunday. And the problem that I think they have right now is there are issues in the secondary. There's no doubt about it. And only they know what those issues are. If it's truly personnel, or if it's something that they're doing schematically, or if it's they're relying on what they thought would be a significantly improved pass rush to mask, to cover up the coverage deficiencies. Now, you know, during camp, the things coming out of camp from, you know, everybody that was watching camp every day and a lot of you guys was, man, the secondary is going to be the strength of the team. Through four games, it's not. And look, part of that is it takes time with a couple of new guys. Mikey's playing more inside than outside. Amos is a rookie. Lattimore's not played well. Quan Martin hasn't played that great. They lost Will Harris, so there was an injury there. But the idea that, you know, it really helps when the pass rush is ripping into that space. They were effective against the Giants and the Raiders with good pass rush against depleted offensive lines and situations that were kind of set up for very good pass rushing days. They actually got after Jordan Love a little bit in the second half of that game at Lambeau on Thursday night in Week 2. I think the problem, though, is if you think that the resolution to the defensive coverage problems is pass rush number one, and we all know as NFL fans forever, a great pass rush makes a very ordinary secondary really good, and less of a pass rush makes a really good secondary average. Now, the quick game has changed that. West Coast has changed that. The ball's coming out of quarterback's hands much quicker than it used to. It's not pure drop back, even on play action. There's still a lot of, you know, quick bubbles, tunnels, and just quick game in general that, you know, can alleviate and can nullify a really good pass rush. But to me, the problem with counting on pass rush this season is they don't have a special pass rusher. And to have a consistent, threatening pass rush in this particular league, without just being a very aggressive extra man pass rushing team, blitzing team, is you got to have somebody special. And they don't have anybody special. You know, I like Luvu. I like Armstrong. But they don't have a special game plan for pass rusher. That's why very early in the offseason, when for a brief moment it appeared that Myles Garrett might be on the trade block, you know, people were like, Washington makes sense. That's why Trey Hendrickson, for all of that time, Washington's one of those teams that makes sense. And by the way, the team was interested for good reason. We're seeing it play out right now. They don't have a pass rusher that really scares an opponent. It doesn't mean they can't scheme up pass rush, but to be a consistent pass rush team, just not only to be a good pass rush team, but to mask what you have going on the back end, it requires somebody special more times than not. And they don't have that person. That's where it becomes, I think, problematic week in and week out. There will be weeks in which you'll face a depleted offensive line. They're going to face one this weekend. No Joe Alt. Rashawn Slater was gone before the season started. He's one of the best left tackles in the game. And maybe they'll be able to get home on Justin Herbert. He was pressured, I think, more than any other quarterback in week two. But I said this earlier in the show. This is not the Giant defense. We don't have Brian Burns, Abdul Carter, and Dexter Lawrence. The Giants have, or Thibodeau. They have legitimate, scary pass rushers. We don't have one here. So the coverage problems against the better offenses has to improve on its own, because relying on consistent pass rusher without a special pass rusher, or hoping that, you know, 35, 36-year-old Von Miller is going to be 30-year-old Von Miller, is really not a good strategy. I'm not saying that they have that strategy, but they don't have a game wrecker. It's why they were trying to acquire one. It's why they were interested in Hendrickson, but the price was too high. And ultimately, Cincinnati wasn't going to let him go anyway. This was the other thing that Quinn said on the actual pass rush specifically.
Hi, Dan. In terms of the pass rush yesterday, what did you see that you thought led to not as much success as you've seen from that unit?
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, I thought, when are we going to take our shots, when to go? I thought early on, I thought they did a nice job of, you know, getting rid of the ball quickly, you know, to get, you know, intermediate throws to go. But the ones that are down the field, Howard, those are the ones that we've got to capitalize on. I thought we could have stunted more to try to, you know, put the offensive line in some disadvantages to go. When you have good balance like they had yesterday, you're not teeing off to go. But I do feel like, we've got to get them off the spot. We had a number of chances, and we didn't nail those yesterday like we had the week before. That would be my main take. And then, honestly, like I said, at the end of the game, not being able to close Howard on the third downs, I thought that was, the biggest factor here. We had some chances here to get them in some third downs that you can get off the field. And when we didn't, and Joe tried, three different ones, a zone, a man pressure. And so we got to be able to nail those when those come up, that's for sure.
Yeah, they tried different things. I mentioned that in my post game yesterday. It wasn't like they were super predictable defensively. They just didn't execute well. And we don't know if the, unpredictability was the right unpredictability. But how about that part where he says, I thought we could have stunted more to try to put the offensive line in some disadvantages. Yeah, the ball gets out quickly. Penix Jr. was incredibly decisive. He was really, really good in that game. And he was he had the ability to be decisive because guys were winning, and winning pretty easily and winning quickly. And that's part of the problem. They were better the week before, in part because that was a lesser team that they played the week before. And maybe they're catching the Chargers. Like I say all the time, it's not who you play, it's when you play them. They lost Joe Alt. They lost Slater before the end of the year. They had a very difficult time protecting on Sunday. They're not facing the Giants' defense. The Chargers aren't. They're facing Washington's defense. It's a lesser defense. It's a less imposing, less scary defense from a pass rush standpoint. But there may be an opportunity to scheme up more pressure on Herbert this coming week than there was on Penix Jr. this past week. Go figure. Grant Paulson will join us next. We'll talk baseball playoffs, which start today, and we'll talk some Washington Commanders football as well. Kevin Sheehan showed the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's not October yet. Tomorrow is the start of October, but we do have playoff baseball. A quadruple header in wild card round today, starting with Cleveland and Detroit at 1 o'clock. Love this time of year. Grant Paulson's joining us right now. Before we get to baseball, I'm going to ask you what I just asked callers, and that is, we're four games into the season. What's your outlook on what this team will be over the final 13 and maybe beyond?
I think right now I feel about the team, Kevin, like I did coming into the season, which was that I thought they were going to be flawed defensively and playing a tougher quarterbacking and schedule overall. And I thought, while last year was a bit of a magical carpet ride, I thought Jaden Daniels would be exceptional. I didn't know if it would go as well as 12 wins and 2 playoff wins, but I think he'll mask deficiencies. I think he's going to play at a really high level, and they're going to be around a double-digit playoff team and a wild card hopeful. So I had them at 10 wins coming into the season, making a wild card berth. I still have them there. I think that they do have some fatal flaws on defense, and I think they've got to be brilliant offensively like they were last year if they're going to get to 10 wins. But I think they have a chance to be. I don't know about you, but I actually feel pretty good about what the O looked like with all the injuries the last 2 weeks with Mariota at the controls.
Yeah, I mean, considering that they were depleted without their two best players, they still put up 27 points on the Falcons. And, you know, I got asked this question, and I answered it on the air yesterday, but I'll ask you, do they win that game with Jaden and Terry?
I don't think so. It's certainly possible. I mean, it ended up being, for what it looked like, a one-possession game. I just think it was one of those games where Atlanta could have done whatever they wanted whenever they needed to. You know, if they had to score 37 or 40, they probably could have done that, in my opinion. They had no answers on defense. They couldn't get to Michael Penix. They got 2 hits on him the entire game. I think they've been ultra-conservative defensively in calling plays since the Green Bay game over the last couple of weeks. And when you get pressure with 4 like they did against the Raiders pretty often, that's fine. But it certainly didn't work against Atlanta. They didn't cover well. I think there were a lot of reasons for that. But, yeah, I just think it was one of those games where it was clearly a bad matchup on paper against the Atlanta offense, as bad as they'd been playing. And to Zach Robinson's credit, he got to some of the stuff they hadn't been doing for a few weeks. There were no air yards in the offense. They hadn't really taken any shots. They hadn't tried to push the ball down the field vertically. They hadn't tried to get Bijan Robinson in space on linebackers nearly enough. And all of those things happened in the game. But yeah, would it have been closer because you have better players on the field? I'm sure of it. I think it could have been a little more effective offensively, but I didn't think that was the problem. But the one bugaboo on offense, Kev, was they were 1 for 8 on third down. And I think I looked at it today, and like 5 of the third downs were 3rd and 8 or longer.
Yeah.
I mean, so those without Jaden Daniels are low percentage third downs anyway. Now, maybe he steals you 4 yards as a scrambler and gets you into some better down and distances, which is very possible. The one thing I'll say, too, to throw back at you about the offense that I actually have really high hopes for, they're so much more explosive in the running game, not only than they were last year, but I mean, I'm not this excited about how a tailback carries the ball, watching Kroski Merritt. It's 6-7 carries a week, but every single week it's explosive, it's fun, it's stuff that's not blocked and schemed. Rodriguez hits a 48-yarder. They've got 3 different guys now who have 40-plus yard runs in the first month of the season.
Yeah, I agree.
They didn't have that club in the bag. So that gives me a lot of hope as they piece this whole thing together going forward.
Yeah, I agree. I just would like to see, you know, he's got 29 carries, 172 yards in four games, averaging 5.9 yards per carry. I'd like to see him double that, you know, to 58 carries in the next four games or more. And it's funny because I think I asked Smoot yesterday, if I told you one of those two backs emerged into a 15, 16, 17 carry a game guy over the next four games, or, you know, at the end of the next four game stretch, who would it be? I think your answer and my answer would be the same. It would be Bill. Although if it ended up being Rodriguez, I think it still would be pretty effective.
I'm quite sure of it. Rodriguez has been excellent dating back to preseason against ones. I mean, obviously, the 48-yarder
last year
was
in
mostly,
the regular season when he got
right,
opportunities.
Yeah, he was more effective than B-Rob. I think he was about a 5-yard per carry guy. Frankly, Kevin, he's always been good when he's gotten chances.
Yes,
you know,
I
there's
agree.
Never really been a problem with him. Here's my nervousness about that answer. My anxiety would be, so the answer should be Bill, but there is a very clear
yes.
Frustration is probably not the right word, but like there's a knowledge on the staff that in pass pro,
right.
they're not comfortable yet.
Well, coach him up better.
Show up a couple of times.
Coach him up better. Get him out there because him carrying the ball is really effective for this team.
Agreed.
I think we've known that for a couple of weeks now. And by the way, it's not unusual for a rookie to struggle in pass pro and for them
1,000%.
Not to trust him in pass pro. But
by the way, like figure out a way. I was talking to someone about this in football yesterday. I'm like, he is not the first guy to the point you just made who might not be great in pass pro, but every time he touches the football, it's electric. So find a way to both get him on the field on the right downs and distances and opportunities and also help him continue to progress and develop in the other way. But it's not like you and I are asking for 30 carries. He's getting 4, 6, 7. We're talking about 11, 12, 15 carries.
Yeah.
That's not a gigantic jump.
Right. You know what you reminded me of? And I bet you've already mentioned it because I know why you would know this. But they lost to Zach Robinson on Sunday as the offensive coordinator, part of the Shanahan and, of course, the McVay tree, which this, you know, Quinn seems to have an issue with offensively. Have you already mentioned that?
I have. This is a thing, by the way, in my opinion. Like, if we're playing thing or not a thing.
It must be a thing. It must be. Now,
so
not every Shanahan McVay team has Bijan Robinson in the backfield, but still. Zach Robinson, by the way, as you know, was on a major hot seat last week with the performance against the Panthers. People killing him for being in the pistol as much as they were in the pistol and were last year. You and I both had a problem with that because it just didn't seem right for you-know-who at quarterback. But anyway, we move on. I want to talk about, first of all, before we get to the bracket and the matchups, I mean, what a comeback by Cleveland. What a regular season this turned out to be. And you're much closer to it, and you're involved in it, you know, during the 162. But what were some of your biggest, like, you know, kind of takeaways from the 25 regular season and things that will be all-time memorable?
Yeah, it was an amazing year. I mean, baseball's in a really good place now. It's got to be noted that we're headed toward an inevitable and certain work stoppage that's going to quell all of the momentum that they have created and built with attendance and TV numbers up. But it really was an amazing year, and I think it's a talent thing. It's a young talent thing for sure. I do think the changes to the game have largely been massive successes, whether that's the time of games. I saw a stat yesterday, 3-hour-and-30-minute, 9-inning regulation baseball games this year. There were 3 of them. You know, we're only a handful of years removed from hundreds of those over the course of a season. So that's been a smashola and a good success. There were no-hitters this year, which isn't necessarily a great thing on its own, but the offense in the sport is up and batted balls and balls in play is up. So there's some good things happening. For me, when you ask what I'm going to remember, I think my number one seed is Cal Raleigh hitting 60 home runs as a catcher. I mean, this guy, I don't know how what he did is possible. It is jarring. Because he's not a DH first baseman who catches a little bit. Like, this is a elite defensive framing full-time catcher who's excellent with a really upper echelon pitching staff, who then just so happened to, in his secondary assignment, go out and hit 60 home runs. And in one of the great statistical offensive seasons we've seen in the American League that Aaron Judge turned in, maybe, just maybe, overtake him for the MVP award in the AL.
Isn't he favored to win it now?
He is, narrowly. I think in most books, I don't know if it's every book, it was a dead heat going into the final weekend of the season.
Yeah.
I'll say this. This is one of those things, Kevin, where even in my head, in the back of my head, I tell myself, you're wrong. Like, you're wrong. I would vote for Raleigh because of the defensive position. Judge was better in almost every way other than home runs, and he just had a better season. But if you take him off the Yankees, I do think there's more talent. There's a lot more there. Whereas, you know, the way I ended up doing it in my mind, runs scored, runs batted in for those two guys divided by runs for the team, it's about a 31 and change percentage point worth of the Ollie. It's about 29% for Judge, which is negligible. I just think the Mariners have scored a lot fewer runs, needed Raleigh more. But that's going to be fun. And then the other thing was, as you said, the and the breathtaking renaissances of a couple of these teams that don't happen. We've never seen a team erase 15 and a half games like the Guardians did against the Tigers.
Yeah.
I mean, as a Nats fan, I find it funny. As a National Baseball fan, it was just eye-opening. But what happened to the Mets, someone needs to do a think piece. Someone needs to – Beth Wilkinson needs to do an investigation. Like, give me 200 documents on my desk.
No, we don't need to waste your time
ridiculous.
With that. But Soto had a great year. Remember, at the beginning of the year, they were killing him.
Oh, they hated him. And more so in the media. There were some clubhouse issues with him and Frankie Lindor, I'd heard. They weren't kind of getting along initially. But I will say that the most amazing thing statistically maybe about this entire season, Juan Soto was two steals away from 40-40.
Yeah.
Like, the 40 home runs, sure, clockwork, whatever. The OPS, the on-base, the walks, that's what he is. Kev, he stole 38 bases.
Yeah.
If you would have asked me going into the year, he's going to have a good base stealing year, what could he do? I said, maybe he gets to 20. Like, that's nuts. That's another change in baseball. More steals, more running, can't throw over as much, bigger bags. Like, the stolen base is back in a way that it hasn't been in 20 or so years. But guys like Juan Soto being ultra aggressive and getting to almost 40 steals, that's pretty crazy.
By the way, I don't know what you're like, although with certain player I know what you're like, but I root for Harper. I root for Soto. I really wanted the Mets to make it. It sounds like you didn't. By the way, he wasn't great in that final series against Miami where they needed to win 2 out of 3 and they won 1 out of 3. I wanted him to be in the postseason. I wanted to see him in that setting. It sounds like you didn't.
So I think I can kind of have my cake and eat it too. I always root for Soto. Like, every time he's at the plate, I want a 440-foot opposite field home run. And I am 1,000% with you on Bryce. The booing of him coming home has always bothered me. I've always liked Bryce. All these guys that moved on, whether they walked in free agency or were traded, you give me good memories as a fan in this town, I'm going to root for you. So, yeah, I pull for him. But as a team, and more so really it's about that fan base, which is largely insufferable out at Nats Park, I was not rooting for the Mets at all. And I also just root for, like, what's fun, a little bit of almost like the college football in me, the chaos of it, so to speak. The Reds making the playoffs as a team that's not that good, but with some really fun talent. They've got a lefty pitcher who's got great stuff, went to the University of Virginia, and Andrew Abbott is going to get the pitch in the postseason. Ellie De La Cruz, I think, from just an electricity standpoint, has some of the great tools in the game. Him being in an October spotlight stage, I think, is going to be really good for baseball. Like, I kind of wanted the chaos of Hunter Green, who throws 100 in October, and this Reds team that nobody really thought was playoff caliber. Not to mention, there is something, too, when you spend all the money in a sport where, you know, some teams' payrolls are a few hundred mil and some teams basically have a player's worth of money that they spend on their roster.
Yeah.
I almost always root for the team that doesn't really get to spend money in the smaller market, and that just happened to be the Reds squeaking in here.
All right, so let's go through these matchups. We're in the wild card round, and it starts today with the incredible comeback Cleveland, 15 and a half back on July 8th. They were 10 and a half out on September 1st. They beat, I think, Skubal a couple of times down the stretch, but he could pitch twice for Detroit. Who do you like in this series and why?
The Guardians are the better, hotter team. I'm going to take Detroit because of Tarek Skubal. I think, you know, game one he goes. That's right. A scheduled win as far as I'm concerned. Like, I lock him in. You cannot do this with more than maybe three or four pitchers in the entire sport at this point in October, because it's all about bullpen innings now, and it's four or five good innings at a time from starters. But I think Skubal, you pencil in for a quality start and maybe like seven innings and a run or two today. Now, if they get to him and they beat them, it's over. I think Cleveland wins the series. But I assume Skubal pitches a gem, they win, and in this short wild card round, it's just a dramatic benefit. So I think because of the ace, Detroit is going to be my pick despite coming in cold.
Boston and New York in the American League. The Red Sox seem to be the underdog in this one. You know, I think legitimately so. Who do you like and why in this series?
I like Boston better. The Yankees come in very hot. They'd won 10 of 11 going in to the final days of the season. But look at who they played. It was Baltimore.
Orioles, White Sox. Yeah.
It was White Sox. Yeah, they were beating up on three of the worst five or so teams in the American League. So I think they just kind of took advantage of the schedule more than they actually. Great pitching matchup, by the way, in game one with the lefties, Garrett Crochet and Max Fried, who are two of the best in the sport with sub-3 ERAs. But give me Boston to upset the Yankees in that series.
All right, so you like the two, you know, teams that were not playing as well as their two opponents in the American League. What about the Dodgers in Cincinnati? You've already said Cincinnati, you know, not a good team. Let me just ask one quick question about the Dodgers. Will Kershaw be a starting pitcher in the postseason for LA?
I think he will make starts for sure. I think it's going to take a lengthier 7-game series as we get deeper into the month.
Will they use him out of the bullpen in the meantime?
I would imagine so, yeah. I think he'll get multi-inning opportunities. And then, you know, I won't call it like an opener, but there's going to be games where he goes out there and you kind of let him go as he's good. As I said, we just 2 years ago or so, I think for the first time, saw bullpen innings overtake starter innings in October. And so he's actually ultra valuable to have length, to be from the left side, to be used in that way. But if you're asking me like over under a half start for him, I would be stunned if he doesn't start a game in October.
All right. So you like the Dodgers in this short series against the Reds?
I think they roll. Yeah, I think they roll.
What about San Diego, Chicago?
It's my favorite series. This is the hardest one to predict. Padres bullpen's exceptional, even despite losing one of the best relievers in baseball about a month ago. I think that they win this series, and I think it's tight, but their bullpen, for me, makes them a legitimate threat to win the whole thing.
In the American League, Seattle and Toronto are sitting there waiting for the two winners. Who comes out of the American League?
I really like the Mariners, honestly. I think that you know, they hit enough, and they certainly have the power enough. Raleigh's going to have a big October. They don't win without his bat. But that pitching staff, Kevin, it's about, to me, swing and miss repertoires, elite strikeout stuff in October. They've got it in spades. It's arguably the deepest rotation. It's one of the better back ends in the entire league. I like the Mariners to come out of the AL.
And then if it is Red Sox, Blue Jays, how good are the Blue Jays? I mean, they barely held on to win that division. They certainly weren't supposed to win the division when the season began. What does that look like if we get to, you know, either matchup, Yankees, Toronto, or Boston, Toronto?
Yeah, I think they're on upset watch either way, frankly. I mean, the first answer, how good are they? They're exceptional, right? They finished the number one seed in the league for good reason, over 162. But that's one team, based on how they finished, where I am a little bit more nervous. Like, there is an alarm for me. Some of the other clubs, you know, that were kind of middling, that were wild card caliber, I think you can kind of flip the switch. I didn't love the way it went for Toronto down the stretch. They also had to burn Gausman to end the regular season, obviously, as they were trying to win the division, so they didn't get to align things right up front, but they'll now have the break to do that, which is helpful because they did, you know, win the division and get some time off, depending on, you know, the number of days and how they line up their bullpen. But I would expect that the winner of Yankees-Red Sox beats them in a competitive series.
I mean, if we see a Dodgers-Phillies, you know, best of five in the second round, that will be heavyweight matchup for sure. Is this the year for Philadelphia or not?
I like the Phillies a lot. I mean, I saw them at Nats Park four times in a row, going back a little over a month ago now, and felt like while watching them, and it was right before Wheeler got hurt and got bounced, but felt like that's what a World Series team looks like. They've got everything. And, it, you know, they're a lot like, you know, these teams where it's almost like the Ravens or the Bills, where year in and year out, you just, you throw the roster out there on the field and you go, this is as good as it gets. You can win 14 games in a Super Bowl and they haven't been able to connect the dots yet. I do like the Phillies to come out of the National League. I think they've got, even without Wheeler, as deep a rotation as anybody in the NL. They come at you with four really good starters. If there's an undoing, it's that I don't completely trust their bullpen, but I think they're going to hit. They used to rely a lot more on power even than they do now, but you still got Schwarber with over 50 bolts. Harper's a big game guy. You can go up and down that order. Turner just won the batting title, hitting 304, which, by the way, is the lowest batting title in the National League since the 1800s, right, which is wild. But I don't see a major flaw there. I just think they're the deepest, best-built roster.
All right. Lastly, the team that finished with the best record, the best run differential, the Brewers, who just, at one point this summer, they were as hot as anybody's ever been. Do they emerge out of this thing? Can they win the World Series? Can they get to it?
So here's where I could be loud wrong. I mean, they were so damn good. And, like, we just talked about the Brewers, like the Phillies, rather. The yeah. Brewers' pitching was better. I mean, they also, you know, it's not power. It's not run productivity with slug. It's working counts, grinding pitchers, everything is earned, you know, on-base percentage and slapping the ball around and putting the ball in play. It's all the old-school stuff that you're going to like to watch if you're a baseball fan over the years. I just don't know that they have the firepower. And as good as their staff was, when you put them up against some of these frontline aces that cost money or, you know, top-of-the-board type pick stuff, I think it's third starters who all threw really well. And I just wonder what that looks like in October. So the formula worked for an entire season, but as you've seen in the years past, they get to the playoffs, and it's a little bit of a different beast, right? That's kind of my prediction.
Okay.
We'll see if it comes to fruition.
Do you have the Phillies winning the whole thing?
I've got the Mariners, which is a little bit sneaky and surprising. I've got the Mariners beating the Phillies in the World Series. But, yeah, I think the Phillies are, for me, the most complete team on paper.
Thanks for doing this. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Appreciate you, Kev. Good talking.
All right. Grant Paulson, everybody. 106.7 The Fan, Grant and Danny, every day at 2 p.m. All right. Steve Sands next. He was calling the Ryder Cup all weekend long for NBC. We did not talk about the Ryder Cup. It was awesome to watch. Steve will join us next.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Fee and fees apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.